wobble, baby, wobble.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we are live in the Impact Media Zone right here on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. And trust me, this week you guys are not going to want to miss this one. So I understand if you guys want to skip ahead if you're listening to podcast form. But if you're listening to podcast form, do us a giant favor. Go to the iTunes store, type in Sports Club, type in Impact Media. Any of our shows will work as well. Give us a rating, give us a review. It helps the show get better, and it helps the show stay free, because trust me, I don't want to charge you guys. You guys enjoy this too much. But Cody's going to join us here in a few minutes. Joining me right now, though, we have most of the band back together. Of course, he is the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
Doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Looking forward to tonight, as we've talked about. And as always, we are joined by the King, A.T. Ellie, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How you doing, Reggie?
Doing good, Jeremy. Doing good.
As me and Coach were talking about before the show started, I think this, you know, for the most part, this show, we try to stay away from a lot of the big issues as far as social and political things. But tonight is a show we're looking forward to. It's about time we got to talk about this.
Agreed. It has dominated the landscape, and I mean, even as I'm listening to some of the pregame conversation that's going on regarding tonight's game, I mean, the topic of conversation is around what Aaron Rodgers has asked for the fans in Green Bay to do, and it is what it is.
Exactly, and we're going to get into that a little bit later in the show. In fact, it'll probably be the majority of the back end of the show, because I want to give Cody a chance to call in as well. But before then, we've got a lot of fun things we're going to talk about on top of that. And if start with you guys, I'm going to jump right into it. I think we should go ahead and talk about those Atlanta Falcons that, for some reason, still aren't getting any credit, and yet, last time I checked, are only one of two teams to be undefeated still.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's Atlanta and Kansas City. And, right. Again, what I think a lot of the analysts – and I'm actually – first of all, I'm happy that Atlanta is still not getting the credit. I had the opportunity – the fortunate opportunity to be in the building in Detroit for that game. And I'm glad that they're not getting the credibility, because I think that's what fuels them. And just listening to some of the comments that are made by the players, and just knowing, you know, having some personal relationships with some of those guys, they like it. They're okay with still being the underdog. They want to be the underdog all the way to the, you know, to the clock strikes zero in the Super Bowl. So keep it coming. Keep the hate coming. They like it.
One of the things I like to add is that Atlanta has learned a valuable lesson of what it takes to be a champion. And I think what they're doing, they're using what I call the throttling system. And they're doing just enough to win football games. They don't have to be pretty. The wins don't have to be as spectacular as they was last year. But when you start to look at how the injuries are mounting up early in the first quarter of the season, it lets you know that they're being really smart and tactful in how they're playing their players, and how they make sure that they get an equal amount of rotation time in, so that when injuries do come up, they don't feel that they're going to be missing a beat. We're putting a player into the game, having to play an extreme amount of time who has not done it in practice or has not done it at game speed.
Right. And to your point, Coach, one of the conversations that I had with a former player was around that very fact, and that, you know, they realize now, what I call it the Laker effect now. The Los Angeles Lakers used to have this thing where they were super horrible during the regular season. I mean, they would do just enough to get to the playoffs, and then they get in the playoffs and run the table and win the championship. What Atlanta has understood about, at least, you know, according to this guy, they understand their schedule. They understand that five of the last six games of their season are all division games. They understand that getting into the playoffs, the best way to get into the playoffs is to win your division, right? So that's what they're focused on, is, hey, we're just going to toe the line until we get to the latter half of the season. We'll throttle up when we need to. This isn't about Sarkisian and the offense is sputtering and, oh, they're giving up leads and all this stuff that, you know, these analysts are talking. This is, listen, guys, we realized last year that we transitioned, or we ascended a lot faster than we probably should have. And when we got to that final game, you know, we were spent. And so now they're taking a separate approach. So, again, I like it. I like what I see. They're showing they can win the tough games. And I think you'll start to see them start to throttle it up after week 7.
Yeah, it's the, you know, for some of our fans, they'll get this real easily, but it's the NASCAR approach. You know, in NASCAR, you may have to run 400 laps to win a race. Yes, the only one that matters technically is the last lap, but if you are running your car extremely hard for 399 laps, you may not have nothing left for that last lap. So, you know, being able, like you said, to kind of pull back a little bit while still finishing the game, which seems to be the knock on them over the last few years, finishing the game seems to be the most important thing. In the game, I know Matt Ryan had, what, 3 interceptions. I saw the last 2. I didn't see the first one. Maybe you guys can help me with this. Those last 2 were because his receivers – like forgot they were Falcons and thought they were Giants or something. They flipped them right up in the air where any defensive back's going to get that.
Right. And the first game, the first one, and I was sitting in that end zone where that pick 6 happened. It was a classic, or I shouldn't say a classic. Well, yeah, it is classic. It was an old Matt Ryan fallacy. He stared down his receiver the entire time. And when he threw it, Quinn jumped the route, and there you have it. But like you mentioned, Jeremy, the second two, the other two interceptions were because of balls thrown directly into the hands of the receivers, tip passes, and there you have it. And it just goes to show, you know, you need those games, right? There's not very many teams that can be +3 in the turnover ratio and still win a game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Coach, you being the defensive back expert, especially of our group, but probably of anybody I know in general, is that pretty much how you coach up a defensive back to where, you know, look for those opportunities, but also if you see a receiver getting stared down, go ahead and jump the route and go for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things you try to first teach defensive backs is not to look into the backfield. But in those kind of cases, when you have a quarterback that begins to stare him down, that means the route is about to be cut short, or you're now he's homed in on the route. So once the receiver stops moving at that point, there's nowhere else for the receiver to go. And at that point, Quinn is basically – we actually practice drills of what we call undercutting, and that's what he did. He undercut the route, and at that point, he just drove on the ball. And when he did, I mean, that's what you look for out of that position, out of that type of play. Especially when that play was thrown. When I saw the other interception that Matt thrown, there was a situation where I was a little concerned about his vision on the play because, again, the defensive back moved over. He moved from left to right on that play against, I think, Gabriel. It was a play that was made right there. And I'm like, you know, Matt should have clearly saw that defensive back move across his vision. But, again, he started to kind of – I was concerned with some of the deer in the headlight looks I was seeing out of him and some of the forced throws. He started kind of going back to some bad habits that he had. And I'm sure that after he looked at the film, he realized that. But again, it is a rarity that you would ever find a +3, as Reggie mentioned earlier, and you still have an opportunity to win the game. I think their running game dominated all day. And I thought that they probably should have stuck with that because, again, there was nothing left for Detroit and their defensive line to match Atlanta at all. I mean, Atlanta was at some points just running through holes big enough to drive trucks through. So stick with what works for you. And when it's time to move to the next phase of the game, then you use that. So, again, you know, I think Atlanta just – they'll do what they're going to do. They're not going to have pretty games that they're going to win. They're not going to blow anybody out. They're going to go do just what they need to do to win a game, outpoint you, and try to keep as many players healthy as they possibly can, and then try to catch you on the back end with the division and then try to get you in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you hit on a couple things I was going to get to as well. But let's start right there in the backfield that Coleman and Freeman and practically anybody else they line up back there. It helps to have a really good line, but it also helps to have a lot of natural ability. And I'm not sure that there's a 1-2 or a 1-2-3 or a 1-2-3-4 punch anywhere else in the league that Atlanta has. Reggie, what was it like there at Ford Field watching Coleman and Freeman pretty much run around like school kids at recess?
I mean, seeing it from basically the corner end zone and watching them drive down, first of all, Freeman was running like a man possessed. And what was interesting is an article got released today where Dan Quinn mentioned that he had told Tevin, hey, man, you know, you need to be prepared to go out and replace Freeman. And he said Coleman told him not when he's running like that. And he spoke about the reality of the brotherhood that I think a lot of people forget. And I always go back to a profound statement that Coach Hill makes quite regularly in some of my private conversations about football in general. He said, listen, Reggie, it is hard to be the team. And when you have two guys who are equally able to do what they can do, and they both are rooting for each other, they don't care. Julio isn't lightning. I mean, anybody who has Julio as a fantasy football receiver right now is probably pretty upset, right? Because he doesn't care that he's not putting up 200-yard numbers and four touchdowns. He cares about the win. And that's what you have across an entire team. Spell maybe a few people that, you know, I probably bend Coach Hill's ear quite a bit on one of the defensive backs that I'm not very happy about. But nonetheless, the bottom line is those guys are happy for each other, man. They don't want to come in when they see – Coleman doesn't want to come in when he sees Freeman doing what he was doing on Sunday. And the same holds true for Freeman when it comes to Coleman. So I think that's a great problem to have.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And to say the other two guys' names, because I want to give them credit, because I have seen them play. And if something, you know, knock on wood, if something did happen to Freeman or Coleman, Terran Ward and Brian Hill seem like they would step right in and have no problems with this. Coach, what did you see out of this Atlanta offense? To me, it just seems, for all the new terms that all the kids these days come up with, this offense is currently lit or it's on fire, whichever kind of way you want to describe it. How are you seeing it?
Well, I see it just the same way. I think that they have the ability to dominate at any given time, but they're smart enough to now know that, hey, it doesn't take blowing a team out to get your point across. Each week they're going to get a little bit better. One of the things with their offensive coordinator is that he hasn't done a lot to come into Atlanta and to change anything that they're doing. He's adjusting to what they understand and what they know. And each week he will add a little bit more as to what he wants from his philosophy and playbook. So this makes it a lot easier for Matt to transition into the offense because, again, he's not trying to change a lot. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Cliche kind of holds true with Atlanta right now in their offense. So he's looking at all the pieces and all the movable parts. And finally, the philosophy has kicked in with the brotherhood, and now Atlanta understands what it takes to go back to a Super Bowl because they've been there now. So they now understand how to pace themselves. They understand exactly how to keep their bodies together. They understand game plans better. And so now you're just going to see Atlanta do what they do best. And I think the only thing that can hurt Atlanta now is basically Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I had written down here as I was watching this game, we'll get to that ending at the end here. Reggie, you had it dead on with Beasley out. I mean, what is his name? I just completely forgot it. Pass rusher guy.
Yeah, Vic Beasley.
Yeah, Vic. Okay, I did have it right. Okay. With Beasley out, you said Tack was going to take over, and he not only took over, he had a handful of people, at least that I know, said, so who is he replacing today? And I was like, that's okay. You'll remember when he comes back. But Tack was a beast over the weekend.
Yeah, and again, that's what you draft the guy number one for. I mean, that guy's driven by something bigger than football, and that was what I liked seeing out of him. I mean, there was a lot of controversy in how he, you know, approached the podium and maybe some of his language and et cetera, et cetera. But this guy's playing for something bigger than football. right? He's playing for the memory of the woman that made him everything he is, and you can't turn that off. There's no injury, there's no challenge, there's no situation that can turn this guy off. So what people aren't understanding, again, like Coach mentioned, is, and you mentioned, they're starting to get the reps for this guy. So when Beasley comes back, which I would, if I had to guess, I would say he's coming back week 7 against New England, what you're going to see is Tack McKinley on one side and Vic Beasley on the other, and God help Tom Brady. I mean, really, because how do you stop them both? You know, and so I like that guy's approach. I like what he was doing. He plays within the system. There were no penalties. He stayed, you know, composed and disciplined, as Coach Hill likes to say all the time. And he gives that defense, the defensive backfield, the linebackers in the secondary, he gives them a chance to really cover their receivers, because you've got the quarterbacks, you know, getting the ball out of his hands, you know, much faster than what the play probably calls for. So hats off to Tack. He played an outstanding game. My other game ball actually went to Jake Matthews. Jake Matthews held Ziggy Ansah in check. We didn't hear his name called the entire time that we were there, and that just goes to show, you know, it's in the pedigree sometimes, man. That guy played an outstanding game. So I was pleased with what I saw. I mean, I see Atlanta take their foot off the gas, but I think it's about throttling and not because of some psychological breakdown or a Super Bowl, what do they call it? A Super Bowl hangover. I don't think that's what we're dealing with. I think you're dealing with a team that now understands, as Coach Hill would often say, how to play 5 quarters from a season perspective. So I'm excited because I see something different in this team that I didn't see last year.
Sure, and as we wrap up our Falcons coverage for tonight, because I want to give proper time for where we're going here in a minute, to me, this was one of the greatest days the Falcons could have outside of winning one of those Lombardi trophies and you know, to drive it home. They really had no big injuries, nothing that somebody won't come back from pretty quickly. They had the big win over Detroit, which was somebody they could see down the road, especially in the playoffs. New Orleans beat Carolina to keep Carolina down, and Tampa Bay lost to Minnesota in what was a double-up blowout. So, you know, good day to be a Falcons fan, great day to be an Atlanta Falcons member of the team. But the only other team that I thought had anywhere close to that kind of good day, as we welcome on Cody Elias from out there on the West Coast. Cody, did the I can't call him Jacksonville anymore, especially since our guest is not joining us, but the London Jaguars really enjoy playing over there, don't they?
They do. Good to be with you guys again. Reg, Coach, good to talk to you. I watched that game. I don't know why I was up at 6:30 on the West Coast to watch that game. But tell you what, Jacksonville actually looked good. Is it more that Jacksonville looked good or does Baltimore look really bad? I can't really tell. Jacksonville is a really, really interesting case because you know what you're going to get out of Blake Bortles, but Leonard Fournette is having a great start to his rookie year. And they're playing without Allen Robinson, so that offense is still putting up points, and their defense looks good. Jalen Ramsey is becoming an elite defensive back. I really like watching that kid play. I still don't think they'll win that division, but, man, they did look good on Sunday in London, and with Jacoby Brissett playing, you know, quarterback for the Colts and everything else going on with Tennessee and Houston, it could be an interesting division race there for the Jaguars.
Well, you know what, Cody, you made a couple of interesting points there that had me thinking. Just in the fact that we're in week 3, and we only have 2 undefeated teams, right? And it's not like they're undefeated and there's no one else close, right? It's showing the parity of the league is starting to change, right? You're starting to get teams that were often in the cellars that are starting to really play well. And even with Jacksonville, I mean, how much of that has to do with Tom Coughlin? I mean, that guy is a winner. He knows how to get the best out of his players. He's shown it in his time with Jacksonville the first time and in New York. And I'm just glad to see other teams win it. I mean, I was impressed with the way that they won that game. And I think Baltimore just just went to sleep on them, to be honest. I think they thought it was going to be kind of a runaway game because Jacksonville has historically not been that great. And I think they got surprised, honestly.
I agree with you. I think Tom Coughlin is the biggest influence on that team because Doug Marrone is not a bad coach because I remember him at Syracuse. And when he was in Buffalo, when he jumped from Syracuse to the NFL, with Buffalo, he did a nice job the 2 years he was there. Of course, he didn't take Buffalo to the playoffs. They've been in the playoffs since 99, but it's not the point. The point is he's not a bad coach, and Tom Coughlin's there to help influence him. I don't think Bortles is the future for that team. If you think that Bortles is still the future quarterback for that team, sadly mistaken, because I still think if they had a better quarterback, you know, someone like an Alex Smith even, that team could be even better, especially in that division, because that division's kind of – I thought Houston would be better, but now they're using Watson, so they're a little weaker. Colts are going without Luck probably – I mean, possibly to November now. I mean, that's a whole mess in itself. And then you have Tennessee, which is the up-and-coming team in that division that everybody loves. So this could be interesting with Jacksonville. I know they lost to Tennessee, 2 weeks ago, but it's going to be a good race going down to it. And you're right, Coughlin's the – is the reason I think he's the reason behind it, and you know their defense is playing really well too. And then when you mentioned the parity in the league, you're right, it's showing because you have the LA Rams who are 2-1. I mean, they beat the 49ers. That was a great game on Thursday Night Football. And as a Niners fan, I can't be more impressed with not only Jared Goff and Sean McVay, but Kyle Shanahan called a good game until the very end. Some questionable play calls, but that's okay. But you're right. The Chiefs look like the dominant team in the AFC because the Raiders got housed by the Redskins and the Patriots got housed by the Chiefs in week one. And then you have the Falcons in the NFC that are 3-0, even with that controversial win against the Lions. Poor Detroit. But it was still a nice win for the Falcons. So.
Nothing controversial about that, my friend. It was what it was.
I was about to say, nothing personal there, Cody, but if you read the rule book, that rule's been in place since the 50s. So,
oh, I know.
I mean, go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, one of the things I want to add to that Jacksonville game, too, and what's the NFL's take on this is why they continue to go back to London. They had 85,000 in attendance for that particular game. And with that being said, the majority of that crowd were Brits. Although they have a lot of Americans that are there, they're starting to understand and embrace an American-style football there a little bit more. So the NFL, they're very ecstatic at the fact that each time they go, they get such a large crowd to come in and to watch this particular game, the game that's played there, but more importantly, the involvement with the community, and they have a great ally on their side with the mayor there in London who's pushing for them to get a team. So don't be too surprised in the near future that you're starting to see the NFL not just talk about expanding, but really they're really going to actually do that. One of the other questions that came up about that with this expansion possibly to London and Canada and you know, abroad is how much does it pull away from I guess the tradition of football being kind of stateside, if you will. So that's the other side of the coin. But right now, I can see where they're going to take some interest in some other countries, and don't be too surprised that you're going to see some teams probably within the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah, and I actually look forward to them because I feel like we still haven't tapped Mexico. We still haven't tapped Canada. I actually think at some point, you know, you could get games in Hawaii. Alaska's kind of out there, but, you know, we have other territories. Obviously, they'd have to do some work in Puerto Rico. You know, still thoughts and prayers to all the people down there. But, you know, sky's the limit as to where they could actually put a game. Maybe in 20 or 30 years, we could see one on the moon. We know how the NFL is. If they can make money, they're going to. But speaking of somebody who's actually able to make money because he was able to get past his past, so to say, is Joe Mixon. We all know what happened to Joe Mixon 2 or 3 years ago when he was in college. He's since moved past it in Michael Vick fashion. You know, pretty much he's paid for his crimes. He's done everything he needed to do. This is what you always tell a young athlete: when you make a mistake, be able to learn from it, move past it, make up for it, do what you have to do. Now, watching him play, it's only a matter of time before his not so good coach realizes he's the best running back on the field, probably the best athlete on the field. And with the patience, he's got power, he's got speed. He's the next breakout running back. Coach, do you see any argument against that?
No, I don't, Jeremy. As a matter of fact, statistically, his play has been as such. He played 22 snaps in week one, which was about 36% of the offense, 16 in week two, which was about 25%. But this past game, he had 34 snaps, which was 56% of their running game. So with that being, you know, the case, he had 18 rushes, rushing attempts for 62 yards, and he was targeted three times for 39 yards. So they're starting to add him more to the offense, and the offense coordinator has made it clear that he's going to try to get the ball to the best players. And I think Mr. Mixon is most definitely in that mix with them now.
Reggie, have you got a chance to see Joe play this year?
I have. And I grabbed him as a fantasy back a little earlier than people thought I would, because the guy always had talent. He was definitely a first rounder, but given his past, you know, I knew he would drop. But I knew he was definitely better than anything that Cincinnati had going on. And I'm looking forward to great, better things from him. I mean, the guy's focus, again, when you have different motivations other than money and football, just football and money, it usually yields a different player. And he's running with a chip on the shoulder.
Oh, yeah. And, Cody, what's your take so far on Joe Mixon this year?
You know, I like Joe Mixon. I was one of the people who thought that he deserved it. What he did was, those acts he did in Oklahoma were horrendous. He's a Bay Area kid. I'd like to see him do well in the NFL. But that Bengals team is just so head-scratching to me. They have so much talent on offense. They have three good running backs with Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard, and Jeremy Hill. But they just – I don't get what they're doing. I mean, they fired their offensive coordinator. They still couldn't win a game. And I don't get how Marvin Lewis continues to have a job. So I think Mixon is the next breakout running back, because you have a great rookie class so far. You have Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, Tariq Cohen, Kareem, his running back when he played
with
the Redskins. Kareem Hunt. You got Kareem Hunt too. So you have so many good young rookie running backs this year, which is incredible, because you always hear everyone say that running backs are down, and it's all about the wide receiver, but the running back is making a strong case back. So I like Joe Mixon. I hope he gets a chance, because if the Bengals lose this week against Cleveland, I mean, they might as well just tank the rest of the season. They're 0-4 in that division. You're not catching Pittsburgh, and you're not going to get any better. So what the hell you have to play for? Let some of the younger kids play. Let Mixon get his run in and see what you have in the future.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You guys all made great points, as per usual here on the Sports Club. This kid's not only going to be the next big breakout, but he is, you know, because of the Dalvin Cooks and the Todd Gurleys that are getting going now, and Joe Mixon now, we're seeing all these young running backs. It's all one big cycle, and now we're getting back to the cycle where if you have a running back who's good enough or great enough in a lot of these cases, then you're going to start to balance your offense again, and that's pretty much how you win a football game. You have a great defense, you control the clock, and you balance your offense, and that's pretty much how you win a Super Bowl. But now I got to get into one of the goofy parts of being a football fan and reporting on it as such. I didn't think this was possible, but then again, I seem to say that a lot about Richard Sherman. At some point, somebody, maybe Pete Carroll, or if Pete can't do it, somebody's got to put a hand on this guy's shoulder and just say, you need to calm down just a little bit. He not only had the late hit on Marcus Mariota out of bounds, and it was a pretty late hit. I'm not going to say he wasn't quite to the bench yet, but he was close. And then he actually got three penalties on one play. I can't remember anybody getting three penalties on one play in my lifetime. Can any of you guys remember that?
No, I can't say that I can remember any one player penalized.
No, I can't. I can't, but I think it's bigger than just the penalties personally, but. You know, I think it has more to do with what he's been saying in the media that's getting him the extra attention. But, I mean, you know, he was a media darling not a couple of years ago. So, what can you say?
I mean, I like Sherman as a player, and I like him off the field because I think he's entertaining. I think Pete Carroll's losing that locker room, and I think that it's only going to get worse. Seattle can't score any points on offense, and their defense can't continue to carry him, because you're going to have a lot of dissension between those guys. The defensive guys are going to start getting pissed at the offense not scoring points. They're going to run the field longer and longer. But the thing with Richard Sherman is he's great for off-the-field stuff when it comes to media. The comment he made about how the odds makers in Vegas has always set the injury reports. The Crabtree thing from a couple of years ago, although Josh Norman, I think, topped what Sherman said a couple years ago at Crabtree the other day. So I don't know if you guys saw that enough, but Josh Norman was great the other day after the game, talking about Crabtree. But I like watching Sherman play, but, yeah, I don't remember anyone ever getting three penalties on one play. Maybe a Raider, because Raiders always get penalized. They always get million penalties, but I cannot remember a player getting penalized, you know, three penalties on one play. And then the late hit on Marcus Mariota is just I don't get what he's doing. He's still a young kid. He's a smart kid. He went to Stanford, so he's a smart kid. It's just I think that the sense of that Seahawks locker room is going to start boiling over in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to they used to be so strong with the leadership inside the team. I think they've lost some of those guys, and I think Marshawn Lynch was actually a lot more of a bigger – he was a bigger cog in the machine than people realize, especially in the social aspect and the leadership aspect. So, you know, I do agree Pete Carroll is losing this locker room, and if he doesn't do something soon, more than likely I see Pete moving on before he's able to right this ship. And, you know, God bless the guy who comes in behind him and tries to corral this because, I mean – In a way, they're kind of headed towards Bengal territory to where it's you know, Marvin Lewis has no control over his team. So maybe they're able to, you know, get everything going and not have such not such a tough day as far as some of the penalties and everybody's always talking about them for the wrong things. But, you know, I'm sure we'll revisit that later on in the season because I feel like Richard Sherman will probably do something else each and every week. But I do want to move on. I just want to real quickly say that if you're a Buccaneers fan, it might be easier to figure out who's not playing that week than who actually is playing because you have so many injuries just from over the weekend. You had linebacker Noah Spence hurt his shoulder. You had defensive tackle Jared McCoy hurt his ankle. Let's see. You had T.J. Ward has a quad and a hip injury. Levante David has an ankle injury. You pretty much have – literally no defense left at this point. You're signing guys off all kinds of places. You know, coach, as a former coach and being around the game like this, have you ever seen a defense get decimated so much on one day?
No, I haven't. But again, you know, this is a hard game where players give up their bodies. And you're talking about players that are the best in the world that are doing it. But when you have, it's one of those anomalies that, you know, at any given time you can lose that many players, whether it be defensively, offensively, or both. And now that's why, you know, you go and you spend a tremendous amount of time in scouting in that area and compiling those reports and making sure that you at draft day you're picking what you feel is best for the team. And one of the things I think that was very interesting this year was that they did a one-time cut for the NFL.
Right.
So immediately, you know, you lost 40 players from a roster. But then also it gave them the opportunity to play the entire preseason. So what you're seeing now is a lot of teams played a lot of the guys or camp bodies, for the lack of better terms, to make sure that they could preserve the integrity of their football team with the players who already been there in the form of veterans. But also the problem with that is that when you put the veterans onto the regular season schedule, now they have to go 100% every play. And some of those guys, I'm not saying they were not in shape, but then some of these injuries that are coming up right now probably is the lack of being able to spend as much time as you would like to on the field in game speed time. And that's one of the fallouts that you have. I mean, you can reduce preseason games that'll help reduce injuries. In the same token, when you jump right into the season and you're preserving the integrity of your football team, we're trying to limit the reps as you get closer to the season with the veterans, then they have to go right into the season and they have to go hard and they have to go fast and they have to go now. And in the first 3 weeks, just look at all the injuries that all teams have suffered as a result of that. So, again, the players are still going to be fighting to try to reduce as many preseason games as they have.
And, Reggie, obviously you being a Falcons fan, obviously you're not a big fan of people getting hurt in general because this is how these guys make money and how they make a living and provide for their families. But, you know, as a Falcons fan, this kind of knocks the Bucs down a peg, not probably a little bit more than that loss to Minnesota as far as the Falcons are concerned, right?
It could, but again, one of the things I do like about what the league has finally figured out, and this trend happened about maybe two or three years ago, is they're shifting the divisional games to the end of the season, right? So, yeah, they've got a lot of injuries going on right now, but they don't have anybody out. right? And, but what's happened is, for instance, with Atlanta and Tampa Bay, we played Tampa Bay twice in 3 weeks towards the tail end of the season. So, again, when you think about the premise of all you have to do is win your division and you're in the playoffs, right, it still gives them an even playing field. Now, that hopefully is dependent upon a lot of different, you know, factors in that, hey, you don't want to lose every game you have until the end of the season. But the bottom line is it's still giving them an opportunity. It's not over yet. And they are a talented enough team that I think, you know, those guys will rebound and they'll start turning it on a little bit. If there's one team that I'm concerned about as a Falcon fan, it's Tampa Bay. I'm not worried about New Orleans. I'm not worried about Carolina. I'm worried about Tampa Bay because they've just got an extreme amount of talent that, you know, given the ability, if they can just win a few games, one or two here or there, and make it to the end of the season where the division games come into play, I think it's gonna yield benefits for those guys.
Rightly so. And as I throw it over to not only our West Coast representative, but as a Niners fan, Cody, you know a lot about defenses with so much promise and talent, and injuries just eat them up. So, you know, you can kind of feel for the Tampa fan today, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Tampa losing McCoy and Levante David, those are huge losses for them. Especially Gerald McCoy, when he steps up the middle, being a defensive tackle, and Levante David being a talented linebacker, you know, inside linebacker as he is. So, but with the Niners, you're right about the Niners. When was it the NFC Championship game against, I can't remember if it was Atlanta or Seattle, when Navarro Bowman tore his ACL, and he's out the entire year. He comes back, then he tears his Achilles. And it was a horrific injury. And he does that, and he comes back, tears his Achilles, and he just does not look the same this year. And then you have Patrick Willis get hurt, and then he retires. There's so many things that have happened to that Niners defense over the years where it's like, not even this year. You can't get any of the safeties on the field. Eric Reed's hurt. Jaquaski Tartt's been hurt. Jimmy Ward's been hurt. There's been so many injuries to that 49ers defense. I'm not saying they would have been the best defense in football, but they'd be a lot better. But, I mean, Reg, you said about how the biggest challenge to the Falcons is Tampa. I agree with you because I think that team could score enough points on offense with Mike Evans and Deshaun Jackson and everything else they have on offense to keep up with the Falcons eventually or even get a wild card. But, I mean, they're playing the Giants this weekend. So the Giants are on 3, and who knows what the hell is going on with that team. But the one thing that's worrying me about that the NFC South, what the hell is wrong with Cam Newton? I mean, I think physically he's breaking down, and that guy, if you're playing that division, because look at the Saints to the Panthers, and Cam couldn't do nothing against that Saints defense, which could be the worst in the league. So if you're a fan of the Falcons or a fan of the Bucks, you should be happy to be playing Carolina because who knows how Cam Newton's going to be playing quarterback. He's clearly not healthy, and they're not going anywhere with Derek Anderson if he starts playing.
And I think you just said it. I mean, we can look into baseball. And that a rotator cuff injury, I only can think of maybe a handful of pitchers that have ever come back from a rotator cuff injury. And that is just not something that he's going to easily come back for, if at all. It's almost like the turf toe injury with Deion Sanders and a few others, right? Devin Hester and some other guys. I was even listening today on one of the broadcasts. Deion Sanders is still having problems with his toe, and he's been out of the league, you know, forever and a day. So I think that, you know, to your point, Cody, I think that you may possibly, and it's unfortunate, but I think, you know, that injury is going to be tough to come back from. The monies that they're giving him, they're obviously looking for him to play, but he's not healthy. It's much like Andrew Luck. I hope that Indianapolis uses this opportunity we're set to keep Luck on the sidelines. Don't rush him back. You're not going to win the Super Bowl because you have so many other problems other than Andrew Luck, right? You've got an offensive line problem, which is what got Andrew Luck in the problem he's in right now. But don't rush him back because you're going to ruin this guy as a player. And I think that just happens too often in this league where these guys aren't healthy, but they're being rushed back because of contractual issues or because they're just the best players on the field possibly, or they're the franchise, the face of the franchise. And I think that's what's happening with Cam Newton.
Well, when you mentioned Indianapolis, what are you talking about? They had a huge monumental franchise-changing win over the Browns to put them at 1-2. I don't know what you're talking about. They're making a run at the division now. How dare you? How dare you sleep on Jacoby Brissett like that? How dare you?
Touche, mon frere. Touche.
But you made the point about the rotator cuff, and the one that always sticks out to me, and I'm sure you guys remember him, Chad Pennington was such a good quarterback. He was so accurate, but he kept tearing his rotator cuff, and it ended his career. But the guy couldn't throw a long far anyway, but he was one of the most accurate passes I've ever watched. But when you mentioned the rotator cuff, he's always the first quarterback I think of because he had like three of them happen to him. I think two with the Jets and one with the Dolphins, and his career was never the same. So I'm hoping that's not the case with Cam Newton because he has so many mechanical flaws. I mean, throwing off his back foot every play kind of doesn't help him, but I like watching him play. He kind of grew on me a little bit. I mean, I don't like his antics off the field sometimes, the way he pouts, but if you're a fan of football, you like watching him play because it's exciting, but if the rotator cuff is really his issue, I feel really bad for him and I guess Carolina because they have to use Derek Anderson.
And then, right. Coach, I know you and myself have had these conversations about, you know, Luck and his injury and about Cam and his injury. So you get the last word on the topic before we go to our picks and then possibly open the phone lines even. But go ahead.
Well, again, I agree with Reggie and Cody both that when you're looking at injuries, these are could easily be career-ending injuries. I mean, now medical science does advance trying to return players with a recovery time that's a lot shorter than it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But now some of these injuries, I mean, I think some of the players do get rushed back a little bit too fast as a result of TV, media, fans, sponsors, what have you, because they do have endorsement deals as well. So I think that players just have to take the time. And, again, with these injuries, you have to go out and make sure that you are drafting what you really need for your team. And you can't shy away or worry about whether or not players are going to shell up when you bring in other players because of the needs of the team when it comes down to the draft. So if you look at it, you know, a lot of teams don't have a lot of good backup quarterbacks behind them. And this is the chance you take when you don't go and you realistically look at your roster and say, what do we need in the event of an injury?
Oh, of course. And, you know, I'm sure the rest of this season we'll be hitting on the Andrew Luck injury and the Cam Newton injury and probably a couple other quarterbacks that will go down before it's over with. But before we get into another quarterback that could factor into our other topic, last week, results for our picks, it was the first time we believe that myself and Reggie agreed on picks, and we ended up 2-2. Which led the whole thing because Coach was 1-3 and Cody had the incomplete because he was a little indisposed of and didn't get his picks in. This will probably be the last week we do picks because we're going to change it up and do something different. You know, we've been talking, throwing some ideas back and forth. We'll figure out exactly what we're going to do before next week. But, you know, just for the lack of it being our last set of picks, all four of these games involve at least one of our favorite teams. So, you know, I don't know that we'll homer out on any of them, but we'll get right into them.
Oh, wait. Before you jump into it, you're going to end the picks when I didn't get a chance to beat Coach Hill? Come
you're ahead
on,
of him right now.
Jeremy.
You're ahead of him right now.
In previous years. No, seriously. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just had to put that out there.
I do believe that one of you owes the other a plate of wings, but I don't know if that's ever been paid up on.
I don't know, Coach. Has it? Either way, it's still there. My granddaddy used to always say, "If you owe me, I'm never broke."
But if anybody doesn't know what we're referencing to, it was a show last season. Definitely go back and check it out. And like I said, once you're in the iTunes store, make sure to give us a rating and review. Keeps us free for you guys, and it also gives us ways to improve the show, which we definitely appreciate. This week's games, we're going to start right now, just in the off chance that they started earlier than we get off of here. We're going to start with Chicago at Green Bay, and I'm going to start with you, Cody.
I mean, Chicago came off a big, monumental win over the Steelers. That was a good win for the Bears. I like the way the Packers are playing with that overtime win over the Bengals. I'm going to take the Packers in this one.
All right, Reggie.
Packers at home. I mean, I like what the Bears are doing, but you can't beat Aaron Rodgers at home.
Wow. Then before you chime in, Coach, we'll go ahead and play our favorite.
It's funny, Coach. It's true.
Yeah, you're obviously taking Green Bay in this, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, too. It's not the first Chicago. I like a lot of things they're doing. They are definitely ahead of schedule as far as performance and as far as this rebuild. John Fox is going to, you know, pretty much hold the wheel until the next great coach comes along. They already have their quarterback. They apparently already have running back depth. Their offensive line is not bad. They have a decent receiving core. We didn't really think none of those things would actually happen this quick. And their defense is not bad. You know, even though they're ahead of the game, it's still Aaron Rodgers and it's still the Packers. And last time I checked, they're at Lambeau Field, and that's just a scary place to play. So, obviously, we're all going to homer out on that one. Let's move in next. Cody, I'll give you the option. Are you going to claim the Niners this week, or are you going to claim the flagship team from where you're employed?
You know, I actually think the Niners are going to beat the Cardinals. I think this
okay.
is one of those spots where Arizona's coming off of a bad loss to Dallas on Monday night. And I think that team is just – but no David Johnson, that team just doesn't look good. And Carson Palmer only has chemistry to Larry Fitzgerald. He cannot get the ball to Jaren Brown, John Brown, J.J. Nelson, any of the other receivers he has. So I think the 49ers could actually go in and win this game if they're still not trying to tank. So I'm going to take the Niners because I think the Raiders game is a toss-up for me because I think both those teams are good enough. Or either way you go, it doesn't matter who you pick. But I'm going to go with the Niners over the Cardinals.
Okay. Well, I gave you the option. I knew the Niners were your team, but I was going to give you the option on picking the Raiders game. Coach, who do you think? San Francisco is going to Arizona for this game.
I kind of like Arizona. I think that some of the things that they had going on earlier, they're going to get fixed this week. I think overall when you look at the roster, they're probably a better team. I think San Francisco is still adjusting. But I think that when it comes to the veteran status, and I mean that from the standpoint of just what they have roster-wise, I think Arizona, even if with some injuries, still have a little more depth. And I don't think that if San Francisco takes a few injuries in this game, that they're going to be able to match them. So I'm going to take Arizona.
Well, Reggie, before I go to you, I'll go ahead and chime in and say that I actually have San Francisco winning this as well for pretty much the same argument Cody just put up. Arizona didn't look good the other night, and I don't think they did anything to improve it. They needed offensive line help, and yet they allowed Green Bay to sign former Georgia State offensive lineman Ulrich John off their practice squad, and he's actually started games for them. So, I got San Francisco beating Arizona in probably one of the Niners' three wins they're going to have this year, but I think this is going to be one of them. So, Reggie, how do you see it?
Three wins.
I actually, I won't say, I think they'll win a little bit more than three, maybe five. But that being said, Arizona doesn't have a run game. I mean, David Johnson, that was the biggest thing that stuck out with me watching the game the other day is, you know, Carson Palmer couldn't find his mark. And with no run game, it's hard to have that balance. San Francisco's coming off a high, even though they lost the game to the Rams. I think they're dialed in now, and they know that what Coach Shanahan, as much as I hate to say it, what he has works. And I think they'll surprise Arizona. So I'm going to go with San Francisco.
Okay. Yeah, jokingly I say three games. But, yeah, I agree with you, Reggie. I don't think it's going to be any more than five.
Yeah, I agree. I think five is a cap.
I mean, you guys got to go get a quarterback one way or the other, whether you trade the pick or whether you take Sam Darnold or somebody. So, I mean –
Well, I'm a little biased. I'm going to always pick against Shanahan just because of what he did to us in Houston. But other than that, so I'm not the resident. I'm not the guy to ask.
But so you took Arizona in that?
No, sir. Reggie? I'm going to take San Francisco. I'm going to take San Francisco.
Okay. Go ahead, Cody.
I was going to say five wins. You're all very optimistic. I mean, if the 49ers are smart, they should try not to win. I'm okay with them tanking because – I think, obviously, everyone knows Brian Hoyer is not the quarterback in the future. So is it Sam Darnold? Is it Josh Rosen? Is it Jimmy G, Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it possibly
Andrew Cousins? Is it Kirk
Cousins?
Andrew
Luck? Kirk Cousins? Or could they maybe try to trade for Andrew Luck at some point because they have a bunch of draft picks?
I think you have a better shot you have a better shot at Brissett than you do at Luck.
Hey, Brissett's won it. How many games has Brissett won? He's already won more games than Andrew Luck this year. and Brian Hoyer.
It's true. And to be fair, if you guys were trying to lose every game, you shouldn't have cut Matt Barkley.
Fair point. Very fair. Barkley looked good in some games last year for the Bears, but other than that, he wasn't good. He's just not good. I'm done talking about this team. It's going to make me upset.
Right, and we'll go ahead and move on to the Atlanta Falcons game. Of course, they are hosting the Buffalo Bills. I've got Atlanta in the game. Reggie?
You already know. It's always Atlanta for me, dude. So just bypass me every time.
You know, for anybody new to the show, I still like to ask you about Atlanta. I still like to ask Coach about Green Bay. And, you know, just to make sure. Coach, who do you have?
I appreciate that. I take Atlanta in this game. I don't think Buffalo has anything that can stop anything Atlanta has, even if they would decide to play somebody on the sideline in security.
And Cody?
I'm going to quote Chris Berman here. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. But not this week. Atlanta's going to win.
I was about to say, I was going to have to play a different sound drop.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Man, I actually have the sound drop ready, too. No, yeah, absolutely. And I agree with what all you guys say. It's, you know, even though Atlanta has problems with people that throw out to the flats, and with teams that like to do that, and also with running quarterbacks, the Buffalo Bills offense is not going to do anything that Atlanta hadn't seen 10 years ago. So, yeah, clean sweep on that one. So, moving to the last game, the L.A. Rams, fresh off that amazing victory over the team Cody's no longer talking about tonight, even though it's a good game, they are going to be in Dallas to take on the Cowboys. Now, as much as I'm on board with what the Rams are doing, the Cowboy realist in me says the Cowboys are going to win this one. Cody, who do you have?
You know, I like L.A. I think the way the Rams are playing, the way that offense is moving, the only thing is that Dallas wants to they need to slow the game down. They need to slow the game down for Goff to get him in second and third and long, because if you give him – they lead the league in most yards on first down. I think they're averaging like 12 yards a pass on first down. And they're leading the league in rushing yards on first down. So you get them a second and third and long, and it's going to slow them down. But I like what they're doing on offense. They put up 41 points last week. They put up 46 in week one against a really bad Colts defense. That's not the point. I like them because I like Dallas. I think Dallas is a good team. But the way they've been playing and the way they've looked, I'm not impressed. And Zeke hasn't really done anything yet. So – I like L.A. this week against the Cowboys.
Okay. Coach, who do you have?
I'm taking Dallas.
All right. Reggie?
Same here. I'm taking Dallas. It's at home. I mean, listen, they tried to force Dallas into a passing situation, so they stacked the box, and Dak Prescott showed them why he is the quarterback. So I take Dallas.
Well, so there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We could have homered out three times, but because of Cody,
missed it by that much.
Just enough. So we will definitely make sure to put out his Twitter handle in case you guys don't know it. You guys can send all the hate mail to him on that one. But no, let's move on to the main event. And I should have had some sort of bell ring or something like that. But the main event, obviously, as I said, we try to keep. For the most part, we don't get into a lot of politics, even though, Coach, as you said before the show, there's a lot of politics in sports, and a lot of even outside sports politics tends to have something to do with it. Obviously, we know about the social protesting. We know about the Colin Kaepernick, who kind of got the ball rolling, the way it's kind of escalated the way it has, where now entire teams are either locking arms, or they're kneeling, or they're standing, or in some cases they're standing in the tunnel, or they're in the locker room, or such like that. But and then obviously the president had his comments, and you know, we'll go round table on this one, just kind of keep going around. To me, the biggest thing to look at is not only finally are we calling attention to things we've needed to talk about for a long time, but the president's comments seem to do what nobody else has been able to do in a long time either, and that's unite the Players Association and the NFL to where they're actually on the same page for this whole thing. Coach, I'll throw it to you.
Well, one of the things I'll go right into saying, I think it started to balloon itself. because it started out simply as Colin Kaepernick kneeling over a year ago. So this was in the oven for over a year. But I think that what our president did in his delivery, one of the greatest things about being American is that you have a freedom of speech. And I don't have a problem with our president speaking on this subject. The delivery of what he said and how the language and the vocabulary that he used, I think, is what really it's never been done before. I mean, it's never been done before. So there's nothing to measure it against. But the one thing you can measure is when the language is so strong that at that point, you know, I think he lost a lot of followers with what he was trying to get across when he spoke about being unpatriotic. So one of the things I want to point out that this was never about the flag. And again, this has been the subject of discussion. You know, every player has clearly came out and given their reason for kneeling. And that's what the First Amendment right gives them to do. You don't have to like it. You don't have to love it. But our country allows for the freedom of speech. It was founded on things such as this. And so the debate will always be there. I think that what we're finding now that players or people who have influence the platform, whether they be players or not, get an opportunity now to bring some of these things that we need to talk about as a nation now to the forefront. And sports is one of those ways that they're going to be doing it, but it's not a new thing. Muhammad Ali did this back in the day. Jim Brown did this back in the day. So this is not a new platform, actually. It's just one that where you have social media and you have technology that can get information out a lot faster than it was at that time.
All right. Cody, I'll throw it to you.
You know, I agree with a lot of what Coach had to say, and I think that I agree. I think the president's allowed to have his opinion on what he did, but there's so many bigger issues going on in the country today than him having to worry about what the hell is going on in the NFL. But when it comes to everything, you know, Kaepernick took a knee a year ago, and everyone's overlooking what he was trying to, what his message was, and people forgetting about it. The thing to remember about Kaepernick is, no matter what happens at the end of the day, this when 20, you know, 10, 20 years from now, when our kids or, you know, whatever happens, Colin's going to be in a history book for what he did. And no matter how, in my opinion, no matter how this movement goes, because what Colin did took a lot of courage. And I think he is being blackballed by the NFL, which is a joke, because he's better than some of the quarterbacks that are playing in the league right now. And I'll go fight with anyone on that. And I think that it's a raw deal he's getting. But then you have teams like, you know, being from Pittsburgh, and I know everyone there probably hated, you know, I wish I lived there to see how people reacted after what they did in Chicago, because you have Alejandro Villanueva, who was an Army Ranger, go out there and stand there and salute because he was in the Army. And then you have all the other players staying in the locker room. Then you have Roethlisberger come out going, I couldn't sleep last night. I can't believe I did. I don't know what I'm thinking. It's like, dude, you did it. Don't try to take it back now. You made a decision, and you have to live with your decision. And the same thing with Villanueva. I don't think he needs to feel sorry for what he did. I mean, he did it because he's proud of where he came from. And I think that I like what the NFL is doing. I just don't like that the message that Colin tried to get across is being lost. And have you guys seen the Sports Illustrated cover they did on Unity?
No, I haven't, but yeah, I heard a little bit about who was on there.
Yeah, so you have Goodell, and you have Aaron Rodgers, and Cam Jordan, and Candace Parker, Steph Curry, Steve Kerr, LeBron James, and, you know, and I feel like I'm forgetting someone else. But how do you not have Colin Kaepernick in the front and center of that Photoshop picture? Yeah, I love what Steph Curry had to say and everything going on with President Trump and then back and forth and LeBron calling him a bum and all that stuff. Like, I'm glad to see the players speaking up. But if you're going to put something out there with Unity, you have to have Kaepernick on there. And no, I'm not being biased because I'm a Niner fan and I like Kaepernick. I was never actually a big Kaepernick fan until his last couple years with the 49ers. And then I support what he did, and I'm not afraid to admit it. He has a lot of courage for what he did. Like I said, the message is being lost. And as a country, we need to just – the hate in this country for one another is just – it's an all-time high. To me, I can't stand it. I think that there's so many other things we should be worrying about that we could come together on. This is something we come together, but we should not be arguing about this. Like, Colin's trying to get a message out there. People are misinterpreting it, and that's what's going on in the NFL. And our president should not be weighing in on this. So that's how I feel, because I can go on all night about this. So I'll let Red speak and everything else, but that's how I feel about this.
Go ahead, Reggie.
I mean, Cody, I think you said exactly what I was going to say. It pains me because I think the message is being lost. This is no longer about what Colin Kaepernick, and I'm speaking not only as a football fan, but as a veteran of the United States Navy who has fought in wars and did so proudly, right? I think, again, you've got everybody talking about how veterans feel, right, about what's going on, that have never served a day of their lives in this military for this great nation. But, again, I think the message has been lost because there are ulterior motives that are going on now. I mean, you've got a president that attacked the bank accounts of some NFL owners, and that's where the unity came into play. And I think, you know, one of the questions as Coach and I were talking a little earlier was about is, okay, so you're kneeling and you're locking arms, but what are you doing it for? You don't even know what you're doing it for at this point. This isn't about the flag. When I took my oath to join the military, I didn't take an oath to protect the flag. I didn't take an oath to protect the anthem. I took an oath to protect the Constitution of the United States, right, which by virtue of that, the First Amendment gives me my rights to free speech. So, I mean, again, we have lost the message. Because this is a conversation that, and I think Greg Popovich offered probably the most profound response to all of this, is that there are demons that this country has that we will not address. And we haven't addressed them since the 1700s, right? Since 1865, when the Emancipation Proclamation was presented, and, oh, everybody's free. Well, it's hard to tell the people that you are us. With us has never been inclusive of certain people. And that's the problem that's being missed. That's what Colin Kaepernick stood for. It was not for the flag or kneeled for. It wasn't to disrespect the flag or the military. It was to bring awareness to the fact that you've got men being killed and nothing's happening to them. Right? So, again, for the president to chime in the way that he did, I think it just shows of where we are and where we've always been. All he did to win the presidency, in my opinion, was he appealed to the core of what has always been America for a long time. I can't blame Jeremy. I can't blame Cody. I can't blame anybody who is a white American who wasn't around in the slavery, in the times of slavery. But to be silent is to agree. And that is all I'll say about it at this point.
Oh, yeah, of course. And since we are running low on time, we'll go around the table once more, and we're going to pick up. We're going to start next week with the back end of this because there is – I mean, we could probably do an entire two-hour block of this. But the thing that I wanted to bring up, and Cody, you were talking about it as well. In Pittsburgh, I don't – the whole staying in the locker room thing is one thing. The staying in the tunnel, which means 52 guys and all the coaches, and especially their coach, I don't want to call him out. First of all, I don't want to give him the publicity. But second of all, to watch a former – what is Villanueva? He's
Army Ranger.
He's Army Ranger, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
A former Army Ranger who's like, look, you guys can do what you want to do. But, you know, as Reggie said, when he signed up to serve for this country and given all the things he had to endure just from doing that, he's like, I can't stand over there and not do anything. If anything, I'm going to just defy it. If you want to fire me, if you want to find me, whatever it is, I have to go out here and stand. And as you said, Big Ben coming out and saying he couldn't sleep and all this, and it's like, okay, well, we can all have reactive reactions, but you need to start having proactive ones. This week, no matter, you know, if their coach says, hey, we're going to do the same thing, I would like to see Big Ben, or I would like to see Antonio Brown or some of these other big-time players and leaders from locker rooms go, I know what you told me. I know what the owner said. I know what the coach said. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk out there and stand next to that guy because he's standing for a lot more than we are by sitting back here.
Yeah, but again, Jeremy, to my point, this isn't about – and I'm just going to be very frank and candid. This isn't about anybody black or any minority standing for this. To be honest, if we really want to have the real conversation, it's going to take the other side of the coin. It's going to take the other side of the aisle to say, this isn't right.
And not to make it about race, but it has always been about race. It's always been about injustices and white privilege and all these things that we don't want to talk about. We want to keep whispering about them. We want to keep brushing them aside. We want to keep kicking the can down the road. And we're just continuing to keep dragging it on and on and on. I look at my son, and it pains me. My son grew up in Alpharetta. He has a lot of white friends, but to him, it's almost like he's defying the black race to have white friends. Why? Because he hasn't been given the permission to do it. Not just from our side, but from the white side as well. We've got to start talking about the issues that are going to fix it if we're going to fix it. And then it minimizes the impact of a President Trump or anybody that comes in to be divisive, whether it's Farrakhan or anybody else. We mentioned Richard Sherman. We have got to start to create that solidarity at the grassroots level and just operate on truth. Don't operate on anything else. Operate on truth, and I think we'll be fine. I mean, it's a long time coming. It's been something that we've need to talk about for several years. I mean, even back to colored bathrooms and colored water fountains and mm-hmm. you in the back of the bus, but you're not. I mean, these are things that have just been in the fabric of our history. And so why would a people who have been under the veil of oppression for so long want to stand for anything? I mean, the anthem talks about the validation of slavery. No, everyone forgets that because we only sing the first verse. But go to the second verse. It talks about more. It changes to America the Beautiful. I remember when I was a kid that they were talking about changing the anthem to the America the Beautiful because it was more representative of what we're supposed to stand for. I mean, again, we can keep talking about athletes standing up and the bigger guys standing up and what about the owners, but at the end it's going to start with us here at Ground Roots, and we got to start talking about it. We can't keep kicking the can down the road. Otherwise, we're never going to get there. We're just not.
Coach, go ahead.
One of the things I like to point out as it pertains to football and that subject in particular, it wasn't until 2009 that the players were even out on the field for the national anthem, okay? The military came in, the armed forces came in, and used it as a recruitment tool. They gave a lot of money to owners to bring players out. Imagine that this was not a discussion prior to 2009. We wouldn't even be discussing it now, guys, if it wasn't for the money that has already been spent.
Which is why November is Veterans Month now. Exactly. Sorry,
true.
Coach.
Yeah. But also, I like to add as a quick little footnote, we have not also talked about the veterans who have served that are also kneeling in support of this. So that's the other side of this that we haven't taken on just as of yet. What about those veterans, those armed service, those first responders, all the people that are part of this as well that have also kneeled on this? Are they being unpatriotic, or was this paid patriotism? That's one thing that you have to look at. Honestly, if we're going to look through a real lens at how this whole thing got really got started.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, Code, you get the last word on this before we're going to call it a night, and we're going to pick right up, like I said, next week with this because we're barely even scratching the surface of this. And, you know, anybody who's listening or anybody that listens to us on podcasts, feel free next week. Hey, 347-826-7448. We're going to start, probably go at least, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes on this. If you want to call in and chime in, just be respectful with it, but we welcome your phone call next week as well. So, Cody, go ahead. You have the last word.
Well, I was going to say, like, okay, so you guys saw this on Monday night. The Cowboys, they all got down on one knee before the national anthem. The people in Arizona still booed them for doing that. It wasn't even during the national anthem. Now, amongst the four of us, who tunes in to watch the national anthem before a sporting event? Do any of you tune in to watch the national anthem? I'm sure everyone's going to say no. Reggie, I can understand for you because you served in the military, and I thank you for your service. But how many of us tune in to watch the national anthem? So I have a question. How long until a team a sports team comes out and says, you know what, we're not going to play the national anthem anymore. Because, I mean, is that where we're going to have to go? Is we're going to have to stop playing the national anthem so we don't have to warm up people complaining, oh, why are players taking knees, or why are they doing this? And, you know, and Reggie made a great point. The players are kneeling, and they don't even know what they're kneeling for anymore. Kaepernick at least had a reason why he was kneeling, and the players now don't even know. They're doing it for unity. Don't do it for unity. Don't do it just to show a sign of solidarity and unity amongst the leagues against President Trump. What he said about the SOB comment was ferocious, atrocious, whatever word you want to put together. I'm using low idealisms here. He should have never have said that. And I love what the players did in solidarity, but if you're going to do this on a week in, week out basis, you have to have a reason behind it. Kaepernick had a reason behind it. Eric Reed from the 49ers did it with them. You saw players like Michael Bennett and Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin who are there to try to support Kaepernick as well. And this is going to go on for a while. And now we got it. It happened in baseball. On Saturday night, Bruce Maxwell from the A's did it, and his dad is a military veteran. Bruce did it where he got down on a knee, had his hand over his heart, and was like, and he was going along with the national anthem. His dad came out and said, "I completely support what my baby is doing." And you know, people here, are California is very, very different than a lot of places, and everyone knows that. A lot of people support Bruce Maxwell, and you know, I try to get him on our show and everything like that, but he's getting hounded with media requests. That's fine, but it's going to keep happening. At least Maxwell has he actually came out and said, "I did it because," and he did it, and he had his hand over his heart, and he said, "Look, I'm not going to disrespect the flag or anything like that." But this is not going to end anytime soon. And the more once people start realizing that we need, as Reggie said, we need to address the issues from not just one side but both sides. There's never going to be a resolution to this anytime soon.
No, I definitely agree with that, and even though it's halfway paraphrases something the WWE did with the character they had, to me, it's about, we always talk about we and we always talk about us. And for once, when we put our hands over our hearts for whatever it is to salute this is still the greatest country. There's no country like this in the world, and there's probably a reason for that, but there's no country like this. So if you're going to put your hand over your heart, you know, just keep in mind, whether you say it out loud or not, we the people should encompass all of the people. And yeah, there's no solution anywhere in the near future, but we got to start doing something about it. But like I said, we're going to pick right up with this next week. It'd be another great show. I know a lot of people are already putting the word out that we're having this discussion now, and that also we're going to start with it next week. So, you know, maybe we can get some other people to chime in. Let's see what other people are thinking too, and we'll be able to continue our discussion on this. But I felt like we got a good talk there. It's good that we have this platform to be able to at least, you know, sit down and talk about this. And, you know,
yes,
I know.
I think this is a start, and I appreciate you, Jeremy, for opening the lines up for that, because it's you know, it's real. It's a real topic.
Yeah.
And you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take time, but, you know, it's going to take the four of us starting to have beers together and drinking, you know, and tailgating together and showing everybody else what can be done and what should be done. So, I appreciate you opening it up for that.
Yeah, as always. And, you know, even if that means we sit down on a different day and do a special one of these just to talk about certain issues like this. I mean, you know, like we've been saying, this is something that needs to get out there. So I'm glad we're able to at least start the discussion here and let people know this is a place that if you want to come and you want to be able to listen to this discussion and even participate in it to certain extents, that this is definitely a place you could do that. But that's going to do it for this week. Enjoy Thursday Night Football. As always, go to the iTunes store if you're downloading our podcast. Even if you're not, if you're listening in live every week, we definitely appreciate you as well. Leave us comments on all of our social media hubs so that not only we know that you're listening, but, you know, if you got suggestions or things you liked or things you didn't like, we can make this show better. If you do get the chance, go to the iTunes store, give us a rating, give us a review. Once again, it helps make the show better, and it also helps us keep it free. But for Superman Cody Elias, for the King AT Alien Reggie Walker, and of course for the coach Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons. Yeah.
Girl, wobble it, and I'ma gobble it. I see you moving your head, go ahead, bobble it. We can cradle the bed, I'm straight racking it. The girls say, man, like the double racket shit. Yeah, I'm so explicit, but I can't help it, my flow ridiculous. Boy, got a gift like it gotta be Christmas. Swag don't miss like it gotta be gifted. The girls broke cameras, and they won't fix it. And they gon' frame us to see that. Let them live the bed while I'm saying my scriptures. Cause I leave you holy like you pray in the temple. One beat, I move with the letter of a pencil. And mine won't miss you, good night kiss you. Take a damn bag, cause you got pistols. And now I'm saying Donnie, pick her up, these issues.
You guys are warriors.